We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
My name is Jari Bolander. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Ethos Podcast. On this podcast, we're going to take a deep dive into the traits, values, beliefs, and skills of all sorts of entrepreneurs to learn how to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient world. Let's get started.
Hey everyone, stay tuned to the end of the interview where I'll give you some actionable insights that I learned from my guest. These insights are also in the show notes. And as always, thanks for listening. Now, on to my guest for today, Rahul Agrawal, co-founder of Design Hill. Rahul comes from a family of business owners. After earning degrees in chemical engineering and business, he struggled with finding good designers. His younger brother, Varun, a freelance designer, was having trouble finding good clients and getting paid. The two decided to build a business to solve the problem. The result was Design Hill, which now boasts over 250,000 design professionals connecting with over a million businesses. The platform offers a way for businesses of all levels to find good design services at a price point they can afford, whether it's an inexpensive do-it-yourself logo or customized printed products. Rahul works on the business development and branding, while Varun oversees the technical side. The brothers make their partnership work by recognizing the different skill sets each brings to the table, having a common vision, and making decisions together on long-term strategies. Rahul stresses the importance of learning as much as you can about areas of the business you might not know much about, and that you need to know a little more than a little so you can be sure to hire the right people and make well-informed decisions. Now, let's get better together. Rahul Agrawal, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Jerry. It's a pleasure to be here. Really looking forward to speaking with you today.
Well, I am too, because you run a company. You're co-founder of this thing, this massive thing I found out today, called Design Hill, which is about taking people that need design work and designers and matching them together to build like really cool products and services and logos and all sorts of cool stuff. And so that's something that a lot of entrepreneurs ask about a lot, like branding and logos and package design. There's all, it's always a very big sore spot, right? I'm can't wait to dig into that and also talk about your co-founder as well. But before we do that, Why don't you let us know how you got to do what you're doing today?
Sure. You know, we have a very interesting story. I don't know many if many of you know that, but, you know, me and my younger brother, Varun, we both are the ones who co-founded Design Hill together a few years back. And the idea for Design Hill sort of, you know, it just happened with us because of the differing interests that we had as, you know, people. I'm the elder brother. I've finished my graduation, did my post-graduation. And, you know, we come from a family, a business family, you know, with third generation entrepreneurs that way. And so inadvertently, when I came back, I joined our family business, joined my father, grandfather. And at that point of time, you know, design was something that, you know, we didn't really pay a lot of attention to. It was given that, you know, for some reason, I had a knack for it in the sense that I really wanted us to look professional. I wanted us to have a more professional branding and, you know, the way we presented ourselves to our customers. And in that thought, I ventured out and I started looking out for designers and design agencies, which in fact, I had, a lot of trouble finding. Somebody who was, affordable, somebody who could give me, enough options that, we could choose from and, other stuff. On the other hand, my younger brother, Varun, he, in fact, was a freelance designer from a very early age. You know, he was having a lot of issues on his side because he was not able to find great customers. He was not able to get a hold of, payments in time, the communication issues. And eventually, when he came back, we just discussed the issues that we were having. And it was something that, we just felt that we had to do because we realized that it was not a local problem. It was a global problem. And customers worldwide, designers worldwide were having the same issues that we were having. And that's when we decided that, Design Hill is something that we needed to do because it was a problem that could be solved globally, and it was something that we could build and scale over a period of time. So that's how we got into it.
Wow! So, baby brother is co-founder. How's how's that? How does that work? I mean, I interview a lot of people, and the one I found the husband wife co-found team, which. Mm-hmm. Is I always find interesting because I used to work with my late wife, Jane. I don't think I would ever, I don't think my current fiance and I would work at the same company together, although we're really good working together, but it's a different thing. So how is it, being co-founder with your brother?
I think, first of all, I think I would like to say is that, you had a lot of guts because, I think a husband-wife co-founding relationship is definitely much more riskier. I think you have much more at stake as compared to, when you're doing it with your brother because, you in a way you can bash each other, you can get angry with each other and you can afford to do that because you don't have to sleep in the bed. Together. So, you can avoid each other for a few days as well. And it works fine. I mean, that's what happened with me and Varun. And it still happens sometimes, I think one of the most important, irrespective of the kind of relationship that you have, be it a friend, a brother, or a husband or a wife, what really matters in finding a co-founder is whether you are good friends, whether you have a similar vision, whether you are able to complement each other in your skill sets, right? Because that's really important because, because with me and my brother, we at a very early stage, we figured out that, what were the things that we were good at? What were the things we were good at individually? And, how we could complement each other and what roles we could fulfill in the organization, in the company, right? Because it would have been foolish for me to say that I can do everything or, for him to say he could do everything. So we identified those things. We had our own skill sets. I mean, I'm a chemical engineer by education. I did my master's in business management and strategy. So there was no way I could, start coding or I could get into development or UI or any other
right
stuff. So, for me, it was it was an obvious decision that I had to get into strategy. I had to get into marketing, promoting the brand, growing the acquiring customers, and so I focused my attention and energies on that side of the business. Whereas for Varun, because he came from a technology background, because he was a designer as a freelancer himself, so a lot of the UI, the user experience, a lot of the technology was built around his skill sets. And until date, in fact, that's how we do that. I wouldn't say that there is any strategic decisions that I or him take alone. As far as the company or the our direction as a brand is concerned, that's something that we always sit down and we discuss and we decide on. But in terms of our individual spheres of influence, which is for me it would be marketing and strategy and branding, or for him it would be technology, UI, user experience. There we have almost complete independence. We can always pinpoint, we always have comments, and I think we've grown into that relationship as well. Over a period of time, we understood that end of the day, whatever we are asking or whatever we are saying is in the best, or at least we think it's in the best interest of the business. So even if we may disagree with each other because we are just brothers and we want to prove our point to each other, we still come back to it, and we are able to make wise decisions. I think so. We've built on that relationship. We've come to a working relationship, and we respect each other for that.
Yeah, this whole idea of complementary, skill sets is an interesting one. I think that's, I agree, that's sort of the secret to a really good co-founder relationship. And as well as you mentioned about respect and like your spheres of influence and sort of respecting each other's like competencies and skill sets and how those mesh together, because I love your comment about, it's foolish to think you can do it alone. I agree. This is such a tough job and such a hard way to make a living that you need a lot of help.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned that it sort of evolved and grew over time, your relationship. Of course, your brothers, and you're the older brother. I'm an older brother. So of course we're the best, we're the experiment that mom and dad tried to figure out how to raise kids on. So
yeah, we're
firstborn's the best. Ha ha ha. No offense to those that aren't firstborn. But I don't think I could work with my two brothers. I mean,
even you have two brothers, even we are three brothers.
So three total. Yeah. So we work okay together for certain things, but in terms of forming a company and working at a company, yeah, I think that'd be tough. I don't know if it's just our personalities. I mean, I think what's really interesting is that, you guys lucked out, right? Like you had the business background, he had the design and technology background. That's really interesting mix, because that's, I think, when a lot of young entrepreneurs are looking for a co-founder, again, the complementary skill set's important, but then the right complementary skill sets are also important. Exactly. So how did you guys navigate when you didn't have those skill sets? How did your relationship evolve to like fill those gaps that you clearly needed to be filled?
I think, if you really think about it, running a business, as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, you have to wear multiple hats, right? On one day you're hiring people, or on another day you are, looking up what does SEO mean. On the third day, you are, trying to, resolve issues between your colleagues or employees, being an HR. I mean, I think, you learn. I think what happens is that no matter what kind of skill set you have as an entrepreneur, there's so many functions, so many different aspects to running a business that there are voids everywhere. And what you need to do, or what you need to have, is that ability, or that at least that motivation to go out and learn things if you don't have. There's a lot of self-learning as an entrepreneur. Having a co-founder really helps, because you can rely on somebody for advice. You can discuss your issues, problems, strategies, and many other things. So I wouldn't have it any other way. You know, having a co-founder, at least one, for sure is very important, because, you know, you can always, there is always somebody to back your decisions, or you're backing somebody else's decisions, and it, you know, it brings confidence. However, you know, that motivation, or that, I'm not able to find the right word, but that inclination to learn, to self-learn, is really important, because, you know, there's so many things that you do not know. No matter what kind of skill sets you have, you know, you may be an engineer, you may be a marketing professional, but as a business owner, you have to do so many things. You have to, you know, when we started out, we didn't know how to hire people. We didn't know how SEO worked. We didn't know what was Google AdWords all about. We didn't know even how to build a website. You know, he came from a computer science background, but, you know, he had never built a website before, right?
Wow.
So, you know, what was coding all about, how notifications work, what was email marketing. I mean, we've basically self-learned everything, you know. And because maybe we were together, and because we could rely on each other, there were so many things that we went, you know, through together. So there was a lot of common learning there as well. You know, not only that, okay, I was just doing my thing and he was doing his thing, but, you know, when there were problems, we were studying things together, we were researching things together. Until date, we do that. You know, when we're facing a challenge, or we're facing an obstacle, or we're not able to solve a problem, then, you know, we both get into it. And I think that's sort of something that, you know, has really helped us, because, you know, we take that as a common problem, irrespective of where our strengths lie. And we get into it. We'll speak to people. We'll ask for help. We'll research. We'll do whatever whatever needs to be done to understand and resolve an issue.
Yeah, no, that's this whole idea of being open to learning, and this whole process of learning, I think, is very astute. I've never met a successful entrepreneur that wasn't curious and, like, completely, you know, wrapped up in self, like, learning and knowledge gathering, because you're right. I mean, there's so much to be able to do, and you don't have to do it all, but I do believe you have to know a little bit about it so that you know you're making the right
decision,
right?
Yeah. And I think I have to know a little bit more than a little bit, because, you know, because
I like that. Because there's so many functions. More than a little bit. I like that. I'm going to steal that line. I love it.
Yeah. Because, you know, there are so many moving parts to a business. There's so many functions to anything, whether it's development, branding, marketing, human resource management. You have to learn, and even if you can hire people, you may assume that, you know, they know their stuff, but how do you know whether they know their stuff or not if you don't know it yourself? You know, how would you really get into a conversation with them, or you know, see if they are, what they're talking about or what they are implementing or executing is the correct way to do it? Yeah, you need to have confidence in your people and your colleagues and your team members, but you also need to be aware of how things are to be done. And I think that's really important. So, you know, as a founder, as an entrepreneur, I feel that no matter what kind of business it may be, it could be a technology business, a mom and pop shop, a traditional industry, one needs to completely immerse themselves into that business function, every aspect of that function, for some period of time. And then, you know, you can sit back, then you can be at a macro level, you can, you know, take account of things and, you know, set accountabilities and responsibilities. But initially you have to do everything on your own. And I think if you're not able to do that, somewhere or the other down the line, you know, you're going to struggle, because you not know what people are talking about, or if things are happening not in an incorrect manner, you'll not be able to point it out.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. That's a great point. So is there, like, something that you had to learn that you really did not want to learn, but learned it anyway? I know for me, it's been sales. Like, I am not, I have so much respect for salespeople, because I know how hard it is, but I fight that tooth and nail. I have such a hard time with it. I really struggle with it, but I know I have to learn it. I know I need to do a better job at it. So are there a couple of things in the business side that you had to learn where you're like, gosh, I really don't want to do this? It was really hard for you to learn.
I think I'm doing one of them right now.
Oh, really? Oh, really? What's that?
So because, you know, I always enjoy, like, you know, being in meetings and, you know, discussing things and, you know, building strategies and sharing ideas and stuff. But for me, you know, ever since I was a small child, you know, I had this stage fright kind of a thing. So, you know, for me, it was always a difficult thing for me to get on a platform, a stage, or, you know, start talking. I always felt confident in my ability to do that, but I could never do it, right? And you know, and it's something, you know, that I've now started doing since the last 1 year more actively, where I've started going on interviews, podcasts, shows, panel discussions. And it's something that, you know, I initially, to be very honest with you, you know, I wouldn't really enjoy it. It's something I still, to an extent, I feel slightly, aversive to. But now I've become much more comfortable with that. And I feel that it's, you know, it's good. And I like it. I enjoy it because, you know, it's a lot of self-introspection, you know, when I'm doing these. So I also go back and see things, how we were doing things earlier, what were the experiences, challenges, learnings. And it's actually helping me as well, you know, though when I'm sharing that, my experiences and thoughts with you or anybody else, I feel that, you know, they provide value to the people who are listening to them. But at the same time, even they're helping me as an entrepreneur because, you know, I'm able to disconnect with who I am today and I'm able to go back, reflect back and see what all things we were doing and the learnings we got from that.
Wow. So public speaking and interviews. Wow. Well, yes. You know, honestly, I mean, you're doing a pretty good job on this show. So I appreciate you being honest and have candor about that, because I do agree that I think it's this self-promotion piece that can be really challenging, especially out in the open, you know, like exactly. For the world to see, right? Like, am I going to say something stupid? Am I really like, and a lot of it can sometimes be imposter syndrome where it's like, am I really the person that can answer this? You know, yeah, I'm running a massive SaaS company, you know, marketplace for design. It's growing at this huge rate. How many customers do you have? You must have like a million customers or it's a crazy number, right?
Yeah. We've served over a million customers already. So we have more than 250,000 creative professionals who are registered on the platform. More than a million entrepreneurs or businesses have used our services in the last 6-7 years. So yeah, so the numbers are there.
So, I mean, pretty much you're an authority on design marketplaces, I would say.
I would like people to believe that for sure. Yes. I still feel that, you know, there is always so much to learn and, you know, so that process cannot ever be over. But yeah, as far as the world is concerned, I would like everybody to believe that. And I feel that I've become, you know, a sort of an authority in the sense that I've started you know, the more I'm speaking, the more I'm able to understand the integrities of the business. You know, because, you know, when you're doing something on a daily basis, you know, you don't really realize how much you're learning, you know, how much, what kind of your experiences, how they're shaping you as an entrepreneur, as a founder, as a person. But it's actually when you talk about it, you know, then you realize that, okay, you know, wow, okay, we've had those experiences as well. Okay, we've done that as well. And so they're quite self, you know, they're quite confidence boosting as well at the same time.
Wow. It's actually a really good point. I really like the fact that you brought that up about reflection and writing about and speaking about your experiences and sort of sharing with the community, because that's the reason why I do this podcast. And just, you know, since you admitted one of your hardest things, I will admit one of mine. I talked a little bit about sales, right? Not being very good at that. But the one I have the most problem with is self-promotion, even though, I mean, clearly I've got the credentials and I've done a lot of stuff. I have a hard time talking about the great things I've done. Part of the reason I did this podcast was to practice that. So I find it really fascinating. And again, I'm very glad you brought this up. And it's a really good lesson for entrepreneurs and what they're good and not good at. If you're not good at something, like, you know, Raul and I are not as good at self-promotion and talking about what we do, the best thing you can do is do what we're doing, is practice. I mean, I started this podcast a little over a year ago. You started talking to people a little over a year ago. And to be honest, you're really good at it. I mean, this is like the result of a lot of your hard work, which I really appreciate that you're showing people as opposed to telling people, like, this is how you do it. And two, you know, your point about there's always something new to learn, you can always be better, I think is the driving force behind why, you know, Design Hill has been growing. I mean, it's a remarkable feat to say over the last 7 years, we've helped 1 million people do a better design, help them collaborate. There's not a lot of people that can say that. So when you think about the future and like how your personal growth and the growth of your company and of, you know, where do you see the world going? How does what you've experienced in the past sort of frame your future and where you think things are going?
So I just like to ask this here. So you're asking me how am I looking at things shaping for us with Design Hill in the future, or general, you know, in terms of technology or the spaces that we're in?
Oh, I'm glad you clarified. I would say, first, if you could talk about where you think Design Hill will go. And then second, if you could comment on like the general like world. I mean, you're actually it's interesting that you're in a unique spot because you see a bunch of entrepreneurs trying to start businesses and they need your services, right? So it kind of unique that way, which is fascinating because you're like at the beginning of the journey for everyone. Like, I need a logo. Well, that's like website logo. So
you're very right in that. You know, we are actually able to assess a lot of industry trends just by looking at the kind of projects that are happening on our platform. And we've done that in the past. We've looked at trends. Like, for example, I don't know if, you know, I mean, you're in States right now, right? And 3-4 years back, we suddenly started seeing so many businesses who started coming up and were looking up for branding solutions and logos and et cetera, for marijuana businesses, cannabis, marijuana, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, cannabis.
And it was just something, you know, we didn't anticipate or expect. So, you know, we just started looking at it. I'm like, wow, okay. It's still not legal in so many parts in the United States. I mean, I think I recently read somewhere New York just legalized it, isn't it? And you know, here's a trend. So what we did was we actually set up dedicated pages on our platform. We did a complete study on the trends on cannabis industry. Because, you know, we realized that, you know, we were actually looking at and we were able to see so many different types of solutions and businesses that were coming up in that space. Merely because of the fact that all these people were coming to our platform to get designs for them. You know, somebody was cooking stuff, somebody was creating solutions, somebody was creating cosmetic products. And you know, we could actually create visualized trends. And we did a paper on that and we published it and we sent it out to all the cannabis journals and it got published as well, you know. And so we do get an insight or a sort of a view on you know, how different industries or different spaces or new industries are coming up. You know, what are the trends? Because, you know, if you look at things on a larger scale, we are able to actually do a statistical analysis industry wise. You know, we map around 80 industries on our platform, 80 plus. So we know, okay, 15% businesses last year used our services from, say, the restaurant industry. Now, this year, it's gone down to 10%. So that means there is a slight, you know, decrease, or there's a certain amount of decrease in the trend in new businesses coming up in the restaurant space. You know, so we're able to do that kind of an analysis with us. So, yeah. But coming back to your question, you know, where do we see Design Hill and how do we see our platform growing in the future? You know, what I would like to say is that, you know, the design space has really evolved in the last few years, you know, in terms of customer experiences, expectations, and confidence in using online services to get, you know, design work and, you know, creative work and ordering products designed online. So, you know, earlier we started off as a freelancing platform, you know, we're just doing crowdsourcing. We went on to create services which were more DI and machine learning and AI based, you know, where people could, you know, just use our technologies and tools to, you know, create designs within a few minutes themselves, you know. So we had a number of tools have been built in the last 2-3 years, and, you know, they're doing really, really well because now more and more people are looking at design and are looking for great design, you know, at a reasonable price. And so, you know, that's a vertical that we ventured into, and we've created a lot of services that are doing really well. Then we looked at the printing side of the business, you know, because a lot of the customers that we had, you know, they were looking for printing solutions. You know, they were getting all the sort of stuff designed from our on our platform, and they were eventually wanting to get them printed. So we've done partnerships with printing fulfillment companies all over the world. And today we're shipping to more than 100 countries worldwide. So, you know, we've become a completely designed to print platform, no matter what kind of design you want, what kind of product you want. So we'll be printing over more than 50 products, from t-shirts to merchandise. And that's really how, you know, the business and the complete design space is evolving. You know, customers are very happy now to go to one platform. If they have a budget for $20, they can find something. If they want to hire a professional designer, spend $1,000, they have we have a solution for that. If they want to print their business cards or t-shirts for their team or you know, for holidays, they can do that on our platform. So, you know, so I think that the design space is definitely evolving a lot. And with that, you know, we are evolving as a platform as well. And I think, I don't know what's going to happen in 3 or 5 years because the space is so dynamic and so fast evolving. But I think we are very well placed to serve every kind of customer, no matter if it's a work from home mom or a multinational company, because we are serving everybody today. The way we are evolving now in terms of technologies, in terms of how things are happening, you know, as I mentioned earlier, who would have thought that we would be able to use machine learning and AI to create design tools and to create designs, right? We are able to accomplish that today. Some of the technologies are really, really, you know, I get really fascinated by like 3D printing. You see the way companies are coming into the space and they are creating so many types of, you know, products using 3D printing, new materials are coming in place. I read somewhere recently Boeing and Airbus, you know, the two largest manufacturers of airplanes and aircrafts, they started using 20-30% of their accessories that go into manufacturing an engine through 3D printing, you know. And so it's going to change how industries are going to function. People are now making boats, complete boats using 3D printing. So, you know, there's a lot of change which is happening around the world in terms of technologies, whether that's EVs, electric vehicles, 3D printing, or, you know, even life sciences. So, I mean, it would be foolish for me to really comment on how I completely see the world in next 5, 10, 15 years, but I really see it changing a lot because of the technologies that are now really, you know, growing and maturing everywhere around us.
I mean, yeah, your comment about the cannabis industry and the trend or the signal you saw 3 to 4 years ago with a bunch of companies getting into the space. Is there a similar trend that you're seeing today that you think may in the next 3 to 4 years be similar to what cannabis did? Because it seems like, I mean, I don't know. What seems to be kind of a fascinating thing just in general is some industries are completely cratered. Like you mentioned, the restaurant, clear signal on the restaurant industry, not a lot of restaurants are opening. And then there's others that are just exploding with massive growth because of COVID. We're still in COVID time. So any kind of trend that you see today that you think may be something in the next 3 to 4 years?
In terms of trends, I think the number one focus that we are seeing today is a lot in the EV space. There are a lot of new companies that are coming up, who are making charging stations. There are a lot of companies that are coming up with new batteries for vehicles, for logistics companies. And I think that's a space which is really, really hot right now. And I mean, you can just see what Tesla's share price is today, isn't it? I mean, Elon Musk is probably the first, the richest or the second richest person in the world now with Tesla. And they don't even have that much revenue but it's the future potential of that company which is being factored into today, isn't it? So, we're seeing that trend everywhere. I think that's something, that's one trend which is really going to revolutionize how we move around, and it'll, change the mobility industry globally. And there's so many industries and sub opportunities that are coming up now in that space, or everywhere. I mean, everywhere. So I think that's one to really look out for, and which we are actually in the midst of right now.
Yeah, I would agree that we're in the midst of the electric vehicle kind of revolution. It was interesting because people kind of poo-poo it as, well, you need all these charging stations and, well, you need all this infrastructure. And I don't think people remember the history of like the automobile. And before there were gas stations, there were no gas stations. There was no infrastructure to put around petrol. It was steam. Like, imagine that. Now I think, again, like when it comes to infrastructure, I mean, solar power is the other one where it's like, oh, solar power is so expensive. You're like, well, yeah, but the wires to bring power to your house, that infrastructure was super expensive too. And, it's just a matter of time, right? I think which is what your point is. And that's really super interesting. I mean, like it is, to your point, you're at this start of companies, right? Like your platform is, this is someone's idea that they need help with, and they want some design help. And it is interesting that you guys are starting to look at machine learning and AI to sort of help or assist in design. There's a company called ZBrand that's doing the same thing. I interviewed their CEO, Rio, on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And he was talking a lot about how he wanted to democratize design and make design harmony. And a lot of it's, there's basics that you can get 70% the way there with tools, and then the 30%, or, as Peter Thiel says, the 0 to 1 is the creative stuff, that focus on the creative, don't worry about the mechanics. And are you seeing that as well in what you guys are doing? Because that seems to be one of the major stumbling points for a lot of kind of entrepreneurs. I mean, I see the same thing in like the storytelling and the PR and marketing space, where it's like, the fundamentals, the structures, the frameworks, the rules of thumb that are, you just learn, but also can be, machines could do it to a first order, and then you could focus on kind of the creativity. Are you seeing the same kind of thing in what you guys are doing?
I slightly look at it, differently, in the sense that, it's design is very subjective, first of all. You may like the design, I may not like the same design, right? So it really differs from person to person and human to human. However, having said that, what machines and tools and AI and all of these things are definitely making it possible for us to create quality design in a very short space of time, accessible to a lot of people. But when it comes to, creativity and human interaction and one-to-one, interaction or custom designing and, all of that, humans cannot be replaced, because, design is such a, is so much dependent on creativity, that human intellect. And, we work with so many designers around the world, and for the same project, when maybe we have 4 or 5 or 10 designers working, you see the how they visualize the design, how they visualize the brief that a customer gives is completely, completely different, you know? So no matter what you do with machine learning and AI and all of those things, you cannot replace humans or the human creativity element to any extent. But what we are able to do with these technologies is that, you know, for people who could not afford to have a professional designer, who could not afford to pay $200 or, you know, $100 or $300 or whatever the amount may be, to hire somebody who could do a custom job for them. For a lot of those people, you know, maybe they're running a side hustle, maybe they're just, you know, starting something very small and they don't have a budget for it. For those people, these tools are becoming really handy, right? So there is a clear distinction here. We are only, these tools are only be serving to provide designs or quality designs accessible to a lot of people who could not afford to hire a professional designer otherwise. So, you know, they'll probably just nick something off Google, or they just ask a friend or, you know, somebody's friend's friend to make a design for them. So, you know, this is a much better solution because, you know, we are, we've invested into technology and, you know, there is machine learning and all of that. And you're going to get a lot of solutions in a few clicks. And, you know, you don't have to pay more than $20, $40, $50 for it. So, you know, so they're well served and better served that way. So I think there is a distinction here, and we are really serving different sets of customers and people, you know, through technology and AI, and through the custom solutions through freelancers and designers.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. I think it's similar to the no code movement, to be honest. I mean, you really can't replace a good developer. There are some things that just can't be done unless you hire someone to do it that knows what they're doing. But as you mentioned, some of the things that you may want to, like, you don't have enough money or you want to try something, you have a side hustle. I see this a very symbiotic relationship. And I really like the fact that you brought up about, hey, you know, we should make design accessible to everyone. I mean, that's what Rio over at ZBrand is, the same exact thing. It's like, there's no reason this should be closed off. And once you, and I think the other premise that's really important and that I think is missed sometimes is that once you are comfortable with no code or code or design or what design means and what aesthetics and what you mentioned about, you know, learning a little bit to know, or I think the word is you need to learn a little bit more than a little bit, which I really love. I love that saying. But I think this accessibility then opens up, I personally think, to more opportunities for actual designers, because once you've made it a little less scary and once you've sort of, like, I wouldn't say democratize the process, but we can use that word, you just open up for more opportunity. And I think as entrepreneurs, I think that's the thing that we're trying to do when we start a company. And if you're trying to start a company, you know, you kind of want to have that mindset as well. You don't want to be everything to everyone because that's hard to do. But in the niche that you've niched down to, in the thing that you want to do, the one thing you want to do well, it's really important to kind of have that mindset of how do I open the access up to this technology? So it's really astute. Yeah. I really like that. And so I'm curious. So if there's a new entrepreneur coming up in the world and they're listening to this, what advice would you give them about how to approach the entrepreneur journey?
I mean, there's so much I can share. I don't know if I wouldn't put it as advice, but, you know, in terms of from what I've learned from my experiences, I would like to share two or three things. One would be that, you know, don't be, you know, people are going to say a lot of things, you know, because when we speak to our friends and our family and then colleagues, and, you know, you should listen and absorb, but eventually do what you feel, you know, your heart says, your mind says is the right thing to do. Because, you know, you get all types of advices and all types of recommendations and do's and do nots from a lot of people, you know. So absorb everything, but eventually, you know, list the things down that you really feel are the ones that you want to go with, number one. Number two, I think it's really important to try. You know, a lot of people don't try things, you know, and trying doesn't mean that, you know, just try this business or that business. No, what I'm saying is, whatever you decide to do, whatever business it may be, whatever field it may be in, try a lot of things, you know, keep trying, because, you know, nobody is really doing anything which is completely new or is being done for the first time. So if there are people out there who've done something successfully, then why can't you do it? You just need to figure it out. So failing is, you know, is a great thing. And, you know, we learn a lot from failing. You know, failure tells us what not to do. Failure tells us what else can be done, you know. And so there are a lot of things out there so that we can learn from trying and failing. So that's the second thing that I would really, you know, share with anybody who's looking to start or who's in the early stages of their entrepreneurship or life cycle. And the third would be, I would say, just, you know, try and, you know, test things out quickly. You know, don't go for the perfect product. Don't go for the perfect service. Don't try and build the perfect platform when you're trying or venturing yourself into a new venture or you're, you know, getting into a new venture, because, you know, you don't know what your customer really needs, you know. So, you know, a lot of times we may think that, you know, this is how my product should look like or should taste or should feel, the experience should be this way. But, you know, when you actually see and when the customers really experience it, you know, you learn a lot, which will really change the way, you know, you thought initially. And I think it goes for every kind of business in the world. No, you can, you know, we can research it online. We can ask our friends, family, anybody we want to. But no product remains the same as it's initially conceptualized or visualized, right? So it's better to go in quickly. It's better to go in and, you know, get feedback from your customers as quickly as possible, because that will teach us a lot about what they're willing to pay for and how they're liking your product and not. So these are the, you know, a few things that I like to share with people, which from my experience I've learned, and I feel that, you know, they can be pretty useful for anybody who's looking into this space.
Yeah, those were great. Really, really appreciate your time, Raul. It's been such a fascinating conversation. You know, good luck scaling, continuing to scale Design Hill, and keep on practicing your public speaking, because you're pretty darn good at it, my friend. I'm very, very impressed. So good job.
Thank you, Jerry. It was a pleasure to be here, and I had a great time. It was really enjoyable, and, you know, loved sharing with you and, you know, listening to you as well.
Thanks again, Raul, for being on the show and honestly having the courage to get out there and public speak. I appreciate you sharing that insight. Super powerful. So as promised, here are some actionable insights that I learned from my interview with Raul. Listen and absorb advice from others, but in the end, it's up to you to determine the best path to take. Don't be afraid to try different things in pursuit of your goal. We learn a lot from our failures. We do, actually. Don't aim for perfection when you're starting out. Test your product or service, listen to feedback, and then improve from there. You won't be good at everything required to be an entrepreneur. Don't worry. Do the best you can and explore how to get better, like Raul does with public speaking. That was actually a pretty profound moment. I really was pretty shocked by that. Raul founded the company, as we know, with his brother. His advice on co-founders is to have complementary skills and to be honest with each other. Being brothers does give them another level of honesty that might be lacking with non-family members, so keep that in mind. But complementary skill set is a great piece of advice for your co-founder. So there you have it, the actionable insights that I learned from my interview with Raul. Thanks again for listening. Thanks for listening to the Entrepreneur Ethos podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did creating it. My hope is that you learned something that can make you a little bit better. If you enjoyed the podcast, please do share it with friends and review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also join my email list by visiting theentrepreneurethos.com to get my thoughts on what I'm doing to get better, as well as what I'm working on. You can also pick up my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, if you want to learn the traits, values, and beliefs that I think we need to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient entrepreneur, and frankly, world community. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at TheDailyMBA, and let me know if you have any questions or recommendations for a guest you'd like me to talk to. Also, drop me a note if you try anything we talked about on this or any other episode. I'd love to hear what's working for you. Until next time, keep getting better.